are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
This is Beth and Dr. Clitheroe. We're back for a brand new season, and I'm so excited. How are you doing, Scott?
Hey, everybody. Doing great. It's good to be back, Beth. How are you?
I'm doing good. We took a few weeks off.
Yes. Much needed. Very busy around the farm. Lots of things going on. So haven't had much rest, but it's been quite productive. How about yourself?
Oh, same here. I'm doing this 8-week-long wellness challenge at work, and I have so many participants, so everyone gets coaching. Everybody has questions about food and fitness and sleep and stress, and so when you have all of these people participating, it's pretty overloaded, plus it's health fair season. So I've been pretty busy myself, but not like you. I mean, I swear I can't even text you. I will get a response. I will get a response, but it's like,
well,
wow.
There seems to be no downtime now. There used to be a time when the hospitals somewhat slowed down in the summer, but that just doesn't happen anymore. It's just year round busy. There's always, unfortunately, sick people. And that's why one of my passions is to try and work myself out of a job. Let's keep people healthy and keep them out of the hospital. How about that?
Oh, I love that. I wish more doctors had that frame of mind.
Oh, yeah. That's the whole idea, right? I mean, that's my goal, at least. I mean, there will always obviously be people who are sick despite their best efforts, but it sure would be nice to see less people who come in the hospital sick, partly based on things they've kind of done to themselves or let happen to themselves. And again, very understandable, and we all have to fight it, but it sure would be good to kind of band together and make an effort to get those things worked out better, you know? Hey, Beth, though, I got a question about your wellness work. Why is it health fair season? What is it about the fall that makes this a popular time to have health fairs?
Because that's annual enrollment for most companies.
I just typically do
health fairs around open enrollment. So people are thinking about their benefits. People are thinking about their health savings accounts, what they use, what they haven't. So it's just really typically a good time of year to have a health fair. And the second best time is January. So typically those are my busy times of the year in my professional world.
Is January big because it's the time of the, you know, year when people have their New Year's resolutions? They're trying to make up for all the problems they had
over the holidays
as far as overindulgence.
Yep. From Halloween to New Year's Day, that's when people typically, you know, it starts to get a little bit cooler. People are maybe eating heartier meals. They're not getting out as much. The days are shorter. So I typically kind of, it's just a 1-2 punch when it comes to not being healthy those seasons or those months. So January, obviously, let's start the new year. It's going to be different. So I do see an influx in coaching and questions. And so, but yeah, my busy times.
I have one more question for you. Okay.
Yeah.
One more question for you. So
okay.
I heard what you said, and you're coaching a lot of folks like you do so well, but who coaches the coach? I mean, who do you talk to for when you have a question or you need some motivation or, you know, you have a concern? We got to take care of you. Who coaches the coach?
You know, it's so funny you mentioned that because I don't have one, but my boss actually said the same thing about 2 months ago. He was just like, you need someone to talk to. You have all these. And I'm like, I do. So I'm going to say you, because I knew when we do talk, when you aren't so busy, you're kind of a sounding board for me. But as that go-to one person, I really don't have that, which I should. I should.
Well, yes, you should. You know, it's like, you know, doctor, heal thyself. You know, we're certainly notorious for not seeking care like we suggest other patients do. So I think also wellness coaches should certainly have somebody they can ask questions for. And, you know, I'm always here for you, Beth, but sometimes, you know, you're more of the expert in some of the wellness issues than I am. So I know that you've got a lot of connections in that world. So I hope you are able to reach out to people when you need it. Not that you need it that much. You're always making good choices, it seems like.
Oh, I did have a coaching session with Ben Greenfield about, I'm gonna say a year ago, but it was really expensive. And I think this is what I love about corporate wellness is the companies are putting a lot of value on their employees. And they're like, hey, listen, we're going to have this program because we see the importance. We're asking our employees to work long hours, to do their best, to be productive and not have injuries and not be a safety hazard and not cost the company a lot of money. So we're going to put these wellness programs in place because of that. And I love it. Excuse me. When I see companies do that, because when I went out and reached out to a wellness professional to have a coaching session, it was like $500 for 1 hour. So,
wow.
And I'm not saying all of them are that expensive, but he was very, very good. He's very famous in the wellness world. So, yeah.
But most people can't afford that, certainly. Yeah, no matter how good he is, that's a pretty expensive thing. Well, you know, we talked about it before, but I know there's been some conflicting data in the literature about the return on investment, so to speak, for a company's investment in wellness. But I've always felt that probably meant that the companies that didn't get a good return on investment probably didn't have a good wellness program, because it's just clear that a company that has a robust wellness program like your company with your program, Beth, I think that the return on investment is pretty clear. You know, you have healthier employees, and that leads them to be safer on the job and mm-hmm. with less absenteeism and better quality of life and quality of work. It's pretty clear from what I can tell.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the main thing, because it does cost, you're going to have to hire the person to run the program, and then you have to have incentives, which unfortunately those do work. There is some cost putting out, and you're not going to see that ROI or return on investment quickly. It takes anywhere from 3 to 5 years to see that really.
Yeah.
In fact, you may see numbers go up. Because if you're really pushing the biometrics and people seeing with the cholesterol and the blood sugar and going to the doctor, if you're really pushing that, the numbers are going to go up. But research is showing that if you have a good quality program, it takes about 3 to 5 years to see the cut and the change in claims and things like that. Uh-huh. So I think it's being consistent. Be willing to put some money into it, being consistent, and then having those, you know, the management back it up and being consistent. And I said consistent 3 times there. So it's being consistent.
You were consistently consistent on your mentioning consistent, for sure.
I know, right? 3 times. So that's how important it is. And that's what I tell everybody. Just like if I'm coaching someone and we're talking about their blood sugar and I give them tips, and then with blood sugar, you're going to see a dramatic change most of the time pretty quickly if you're consistent. But for like the weight issues, that's why I always tell people. So it's not only being consistent in the business world with the finances, being consistent in your world and eating healthy. And you might not see a change overnight, and I think a lot of people get down with that. They're just like, I just don't feel good. I'm not seeing the scale change. So I'm going to give up. And you just can't give up. You have to be, what's the word?
Consistent.
There you go. Consistent with it. Once you have that strong base, that strong foundation, you can quote unquote have those cheat meals every once in a while, but not until you have that strong foundation. So it's just a twofold. You have to really think about your health and what's important.
Well, I know this is being done in a lot of areas in industry and high tech and other areas, but I think company that's big enough they can afford a robust wellness program and even a medical team can really reap rewards for all the things we talked about, plus just the convenience of patients being able to seek medical care, you know, at the hospital, at the place of work, you know. And I know Apple does that, at least I hear about it, and indirectly from some of the folks that work at the Apple campus here in Austin. And I think that's just so wonderful that, you know, you could have a doctor and or a nurse practitioner or a nurse and a wellness person all, and maybe a dietitian working together, physical therapy, all of that to get people mm-hmm. healthy, you know, so they can still come to work. And then for an hour at lunch or an hour before or after work, they can go and meet with their necessary health professional to get some extra coaching or treatment. That's just, I think that's fantastic. And I think that that may be one of the ways we can improve the health of Americans and also control costs, at least in this country. I know other countries do it too. So,
well, it's actually really interesting that you brought up the word cost, because something that's really sparked an interest in me and me wanting to have a conversation that we've touched on but never really talked about is the importance of stress management, but putting a spin on it, improving our financial fitness or our financial health and the cost. Mm-hmm. Because right now, I mean, currently the latest statistics show that money and stress over money is the number one cause of stress in our culture today. So I think that we all know how much stress is it can play a major role in our health and well-being. So I really think I'd love to have a conversation about financial health, financial fitness type of thing. I really do.
Boy, that is certainly is tied together, because that's one of, like you said, the most common forms of stress, and stress is so toxic on health. And so if you can get your finances right, that may improve your stress, lower your stress level and improve your health. And it kind of somewhat circular, you know, again, it's just that whole idea that we always think that money will buy us happiness, but it doesn't always. It certainly, you know, can, but you know, there's a lot of data out there that people who make a ton of money aren't necessarily happier, quote unquote, than people who make less, based on, you know, surveys and testing. And so I think it's a very important topic, you know, and I think that's one of the things that, again, in healthcare, in this, the social history to me is so fascinating. You know, the history present illness, the past medical history, family history, it's all important, but the social history is so important. And sometimes physicians breeze through it, but, you know, questions about, of course, tobacco usage and alcohol usage and illicit drug usage are often asked, but, you know, questions about, do you have stress in your life? Do you have financial stress? You know, those are seem very personal, but if you explain it in a way that, hey, I'm interested in all of the aspects of your health, and we know from data that stress from marital issues and stress from financial issues and stress from job issues all play into our health. Can we talk about that a little bit? And if you lay the groundwork, patients will be a little more amenable to it often. And I think that's important. Well, how do you broach the subject?
Well, I really think that, you know, stress literally changes the chemistry that is taking place in our bodies. I mean, when we're under stress or chronic stress, every single thought that we have has correlating chemistry that goes along with it. So stressful thoughts are just creating more and more stress hormones, neurotransmitter dysfunction, and making our bodies not work and our minds not work as optimally as they can. So when you understand that, and when I talk to people and when I coach them, I address the four pillars of health, which is food, fitness, stress, and sleep. And I mean, obviously there's the tobacco cessation component, there's the healthy pregnancy component, but those are the four pillars of health, because not everybody uses tobacco, not everybody is pregnant. So those are one-offs. But when I always, and I really do address all different stresses in people's lives, and, you know, not only my professional job, but the show, I mean, really, this is what it's all about. It's not just about food, although food is a huge component. It's not just about fitness, and fitness is also a huge component, but quality sleeps and our relationships, all of these things that pour into our overall health and wellness. So how I approach it with people is typically I talk about the four pillars of health, and 9 times out of 10, no, let's say 50% of the time, people are like, oh my gosh, I have so much stress. They wear about like a badge of honor. They're like, I handle it really, really well. Those other 50%, they're like, oh no, I don't have any stress at all. But as time, you know, goes on and the coaching continues, 9 times out of 10, there's always an underlining issue of stress in people's lives. And we just talk it through. So I know we've talked about stress in my life, stress in your life, and sometimes just having that person listen, they kind of come up with answers themselves, or you just give them little tips. Like journaling is a big thing. It's something that I do. I can't say every night, but I keep a journal right next to my bed. And if I'm feeling like I can't tired or maybe a little anxious, I will write in that journal, and it'll be just like what I did the day, things I need to do, what's stressing me out. sometimes it's a to-do list and I feel a little bit more focused and strong, so I can go to sleep knowing that I'm what I'm going to do the next day. So journaling is big for me, meditating, exercising. But again, I honestly think stress is the root of a lot of diseases out there, not just depression or being anxious or PTSD or anything like that. I think stress is a chronic condition that can cause some major diseases.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. Well, I mean, again, it gets kind of complicated though, because, you know, some of this delves into the idea of mindfulness and meditation. And then of course, you know, psychological treatments of people who have PTSD or other types of stress. It takes a team approach, in my opinion, right?
It definitely does. And I think some people are kind of limited, but in the teamed approach in my world, it's basically, because I'm not a doctor, I can't prescribe, you know, antidepressants or anti-anxiety medicine or anything like that. So I really try to teach a holistic, natural way of living. And it's not an overnight fix. I'm not going to say go out for a 45-minute walk or jog and eat really, really healthy and get your sleep. You're going to feel better tomorrow. It takes time. It takes anywhere from 3 weeks to 3 months to really feel a difference. Again, you have to be consistent with it. If you're not, you're going to fall back into that. And I noticed with me, believe it or not, if I have sugar, and I'm not kidding, if I have sugar, I kind of feel down. I mean, it tastes good. Oh my gosh. It tastes really, really good. It makes me happy for about 10 minutes. But I notice on the days when I have sugar, I just kind of feel lousy, like mentally, the rest of the day. And I have a hard time sleeping at night.
No joke. Well, is that after the sugar high, do you get the rush first and then you kind of come down on it? Is it maybe you're, because I know that there's talk about how dopamine levels go up when you have sugar. So maybe you get that dopamine surge, but it's very short lived, or maybe your insulin levels go up and your blood sugar goes down. So is it kind of an up and down type thing, or you don't even get the rush anymore?
It's not so much a rush. It's just like, okay, so if you're having a piece of carrot cake, which tastes really, really good, and you're eating that carrot cake, you're like, oh, this tastes good. And you're happy because it tastes good. So my serotonin, my dopamine, all those happy hormones go up because it tastes good. And then maybe I have a crash. It's nothing that's that dramatic, but I just kind of feel lousy the rest of the day. So I think this is for a lot of people. I'm very aware of how food affects me psychologically and physiologically, my body and my mind, how it affects me. But I just feel kind of like the rest of the day. I just feel lethargic. So even though it tastes good, it's the risk versus reward doesn't balance out for me. So I really try very, very hard not to have sugar. It tastes good, absolutely. And then again, sleeping. And I don't know if it's a carbohydrate because it gives you energy and I have more energy, more sugar in my body. That's why I have a hard time sleeping at night. But no joke, Scott, when I have sugar, I feel like crap the rest of the day and I don't sleep well at night. So
interesting.
And that's just one component of it.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I think it all plays into it. And again, one of the overlying themes of this discussion really is that there's not a pill for it. There's not a pill for it. There's not a quick fix. I mean, I think somebody like you can really lend some credence to the fact that it just takes time. I think Americans and most of us in the modern world are expecting a quick fix, but it doesn't, you know, some of the things that have happened to us health-wise didn't happen overnight. So I think it's healthy and helpful to realize that it won't happen overnight, but you can start to see some improvement pretty quickly if you stick to it, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And it goes without saying what we do for a living, although they're completely, I won't say completely different, but they are different. The same, what we do is the same. We want to make people happy and healthy. I can't prescribe medicine. I certainly, if you would put me in a white lab coat, I would probably just freak out because that would be so intimidating for me. But I think we want, you know, to bring out the very best in people in the world and, you know, just give them, I want to give them insight on what it takes to take their life to the next level, to be happy, to be healthy. So it's, I love my job.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I really do. I mean, it's to see somebody get that relief from good news or to get some idea of how they can improve their health. It's a great feeling. It really is.
So I want to ask you before we kind of get back into stress management, what do you do when you're stressed out? What's your kind of go-to? I know we've always talked in the past, walking barefoot on the grass or going for a run. And those are kind of your go-to, but when it comes to stress, and I'm not talking about like, oh, Austin traffic is just crazy, just like Houston traffic. But like when you are really like, I am stressed out. First of all, what stresses you out? I want to know that. What stresses you out? Make us think you are a real person. And
I am.
Right. Well, and what do you do?
Yeah. At work, I get stressed like everybody does with just a lot of stimuli coming at me. You know, my phone's going off. I'm getting asked by nurses questions, and patients are asking me, and you know, I'm just getting all these type of distractions coming at me, and it's very difficult for me. So I usually have to just put the phone on silent for a second, go into the dictation room or a call room if it's available, or my office, and just take a break. So for me, quiet is a good way to break that cycle. Also, sometimes instead of just going to the call room, I'll go outside and go for a walk around the hospital. So fresh air and clouds and birds and just lack of fluorescent light is a good way for me mm-hmm. to de-stress. Mm-hmm. So that's at work. But, you know, when I'm feeling stressed in general about other things, money or other issues, I will, you know, usually look to exercise. I mean, exercise for me has always been a way to initially just distract myself from whatever's stressing me out. But then there's that post-exercise feeling that I look forward to that makes me feel like everything's going to be okay. You know, that post-work out high, if that's the right word, or just that euphoria that I sometimes get and often get, you know, it really helps me. So, and that's why I like to do things like run or with people or swim by myself, because running by myself, sometimes my mind will still wander too much that it's not as helpful as it normally would be. When I run with other people and we're talking and joking and trying to, you know, keep each other going, then you kind of don't have time to talk about your troubles, so to speak. And then swimming for me is so difficult. I'm not a good swimmer that for swimming, I have to concentrate that it just is all I can do to kind of keep going to the other side of the pool and back, you know. So I find myself kind of focused on my breathing and focused on my turning and my stroke and all that, so that I can kind of clear my mind too. Mm-hmm. What I haven't said, because I keep trying, is meditation. I have done it, and I've had good sessions, but it has been very difficult for me. And I sympathize with people who say the same thing. I mean, I have a partner in my group who's a really well-known meditation and mindfulness practitioner and teacher, and you know, she just encourages me to keep trying. But and I do, and I know it's working. But I wish I could tap into that. I just don't tap into it as much as I should probably.
Yeah, that meditation for me is difficult too. Like sitting there and thinking of nothing, my brain mm-hmm. does not work like that. I think I've had, and I'm not kidding, over the past, let's say I've tried meditation for 5 years, off and on. Mm-hmm. I think I've had one good session, where I'm like, wow, I kind of felt like I was really getting a good experience out of it. The rest of the time, I just get frustrated because I don't have that experience. Does it make sense?
No, absolutely. It absolutely does. I really think that is important to keep in mind for everybody, is that, you know, your way of relaxing may not be what you read online or what you hear on a podcast or what works for your best friend. You have to find what works for you, because we're all wired differently, you know. Mm-hmm. As much as I said I don't like noise, on the other hand, I like relaxing sounds, you know, rushing water, breeze in the trees, birds chirping. Heck, even the sound of a fan, you know, I mean, I think that's just from growing up in Houston and having fans always going on because it was so darn hot. I mean, fans for me is somewhat a comforting kind of white noise, you know? Mm-hmm. So I do like quiet, but sometimes total quiet is also difficult. So I think, you know, I think it's just important for everybody to kind of be mindful of it. I know I probably said this on this podcast, and I may have told you this, but many years ago, one of my really dear friends is also a physician, told me that one of the things he suggested, you know, as we were talking about this kind of thing, is to turn the radio off in the car, which really for a lot of people is so foreign, you know. And so that day I did, and I do it periodically. It's very distract, unnerving is the word at first, to for me at least, to be in a car with the radio on or whatever. But, you know, it really is somewhat relaxing. You can kind of be more mindful of the clouds and the trees and the cars and the people on the sidewalk and all that. That's usually are just kind of, you know, you're on, you know, autopilot, literally, I guess, and figuratively, but you're on autopilot. So maybe another suggestion for some people, maybe just, hey, turn the radio off in the car. And then lastly, that's before I forget, yeah, one more thing though. And again, and this is just a comment, I guess, you know, right now, you know, there's a lot of interesting politics going on and controversy and all that, but really it's always there, right? In one way or the other, maybe it's a little more hyper right now, but I just have found for me personally, and this is just me, is I don't watch the news anymore. I don't, because I kind of feel like, you know, I will find out if something's bad going on. If there's a earthquake or something bad, I will get the message. But most of the news, to me at least, what I see on TV is it's concocted fear. It's just this, there's really nothing new going on, but they just have another news alert, and the scrolling thing at the bottom. And I oftentimes in the hospital will suggest to my patients, say, I think it may be a good idea to turn this off, you know, and let's turn it over to the Discovery Channel or the National Geographic Channel. So that's just another thing that came to mind when you talked about de-stressing, is turning off the TV or at least turning it off of some of the stressful stuff.
You know, it's funny you say that, because there have been times when I don't watch the news typically, unless it's a huge event, you know, yeah. Then I'm going to turn it on, see what's going on. But I've never been a big news person. And I've had times in the pretty recent past where people have said, oh my gosh, did you hear about the flood in Houston? I'm like, it's raining? Because I wasn't in Houston when it was flooding a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. I was out of town on work, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I didn't even know it was raining. So get back and all this damage. But so I think, yeah, I'm with you. Just watching the news and hearing what can be so like cause anxiety for me. And yes. I just don't like to hear that negativity. And, you know, don't want to get into politics too much. But with the, you know, the presidential election next year that's starting up, and it's just this whole bantering back and forth, negative on both sides, is just maddening to me. So I do. I like my happy Snow White and watch the Disney princesses and pug cartoons and whatnot. That makes me happy. Yeah.
Well, and a couple of things. I mean, that makes me think about a couple of other things that, again, are pretty well known out there, but I think they're worthwhile talking about, is just that the practice of gratitude, you know, just when you're starting to feel stressed or sad or whatever the word is, just, you know, make a mental note of what you're grateful for, you know, and maybe that's just as simple as running water. I mean, you know, I'm reading the Poisonwood Bible right now, which I've never read. And it's just, oh my gosh, you know, it's about a family that goes to the Congo as kind of missionaries. But, you know, we take for granted the running water in the faucet. I mean, you know, you can go pretty basic on the gratitude list when it comes to the way we live in this country. And we're pretty fortunate, and it doesn't minimize the things that we go through, but it is sometimes helpful to go, well, you know, I've got a car, and I've got a central air and heat and running water. Those that can be pretty helpful, you know.
Mm-hmm. I have a Whole Foods; it's 5 minutes away. Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's kind of a little, you know, tongue in cheek, but seriously, absolutely. And I think that if you really stop to think about what other people have gone through, or where you possibly could be, you know, waking up and thinking of 3 to 5 things that you're thankful for before you go to sleep, you know, I think that can be extremely powerful.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I, you know, and again, I have to reiterate what you told me, because you told me this, is if you can take your shoes off and walk barefoot in the grass, that is pretty stress reducing.
It is. You feel different. And so I started doing that, gosh, what, 6 or 7 years ago? And oh my gosh. Now in West Texas, when you go barefoot in the grass, you're going to get stickers and you can have fire ants. And that's not too.
You got to be careful. Right. You got to be careful.
And cactus.
Well,
and all
you know,
that.
Is there something true to the, and again, I'm asking you because I don't know the answer to this question, but I've heard patients talk about this, that, you know, when you lie on the grass, you lie on the ground, when you're camping, when you're sleeping on the ground, there's your body connecting to the earth in a way mm-hmm. that's not typical for us with our shoes on and sitting in chairs and sleeping in beds. There's the electromagnetic fields of the earth are beneficial. I don't understand any of that, but it would kind of make sense. I mean, it seems to be something that resonates. Oh,
absolutely. And I think the reason, absolutely, and you said it perfect, except what you're doing, you're connecting to the earth. And when you think about the soil, you know, if the soil is good and rich and has magnesium in them and those, you know, minerals that our bodies need, you're walking barefoot and the biggest pores in your body are in the bottom of your feet. So when you're walking, you're getting those things kind of sucked at it and just roots you to Mother Earth. And I know that sounds kind of woo-woo or hokey or whatever, but there is a real science and it does make you feel better. When I want to walk barefoot on the grass, I typically do it in the morning. So I'm getting my vitamin D and all that. But I encourage our listeners to go out and try that. And you will feel a difference. It's not like taking a psychotropic and you're like, whoa. I mean, obviously, it's not like that. But it does just make you feel a little different. It makes you feel grounded.
I've always, maybe this is a business opportunity for me, but I've always felt that it'd be fun to see patients outside in a HIPAA compliant way. But, you know, when I was in Haiti after the earthquake, I mean, that was one of the most impactful things among many was that we were seeing patients outside, you know, in tents because of the infrastructure damage. And it was very, again, separating everything else about the experience, which is just amazing and horrifying and amazing and wonderful and all these adjectives at one time. And maybe that's another episode, but you know, it was amazing to see people outside. I realized, wait a second, I can hear bird. I'm talking to this patient. I'm listening to this patient and I can hear birds chirping and the breeze is blowing through. And I was like, hey, I kind of like this, you know? And again, it's not ideal obviously. And not something you can do all the time, but maybe there's an avenue for that, you know, certainly psychotherapy. I mean, that may not be a bad idea, and I'm sure it's done already, but to take that session outside, you know, it's probably not a bad idea.
As long as it's not 110 or the humidity like 99 and or 2 degrees outside.
Which unfortunately, it's still like that in Texas. I mean, what happened to fall? Where's fall? We need fall.
I know. It was actually a little bit cooler this morning. I didn't wake up and go outside and feel like I was in an oven. So we're getting there. We're getting there.
What else about stress should we talk about? I mean, I think we've knocked out a lot of things, panic and anxiety. I mean, certainly there's a lot of, psychiatric disorders, psychological disorders that are not due to external factors, but due to internal factors. So if you're somebody listening who's feeling stressed or anxious and you really can't put your finger on why, that's not unusual. And you need to speak to your healthcare professional about that because that's a very common thing. And there's ways to treat that too.
Yeah. And I think the important thing to, you know, and the best way that someone described it to me, because I always thought kind of stress, anxiety, depression kind of were all the same thing, but someone, and it just is brilliant. And it makes sense that depression is kind of feeling stress from things from the past. Like you're just depressed, you know, something that's happened to you. And anxiety is being stressed about things in the future. So I think that is a really, really good way of putting that and exactly what someone, you know, I mean, we can think about what causes someone, you know, when they're in their teenage years, maybe what stresses them out, good grades, getting into a good college, fitting in, looking a certain way, you know, really changes to when you're in your 20s, graduating college, going get your master's, your PhD, going to med school, paying it off, meeting your significant other, making ends meet. And then it just kind of morphs. So I think there's a real, you know, different way of strategy for teenagers and young adults and middle-aged and older. So because our stressors are always changing, but one thing that will never change is there's some really good foods to eat for natural stress relief.
Oh, really? Tell me.
Well, now with that segue,
I love it. I'm pretty sure you're not going to be able to get any of this in the drive-through.
Maybe Panera Bread.
Oh, okay. Maybe a smoothie shack or something. Okay, go ahead. I want to find out.
Okay, foods high in vitamin B. We're talking, which vitamin B, our bodies use this to convert nutrients to energy. So we need foods that have the B vitamins. And this is raw or cultured dairy products, eggs, grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, poultry, green leafy vegetables. So those foods are really high in the B vitamins. So that's a really good food to put into your diet for stress relief.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Foods.
What about? Go ahead. What other besides vitamin B? What other stress vitamins do you recommend?
Well, there's actually a couple foods that are high in calcium and magnesium are really good, because calcium and magnesium are important, minerals and electrolytes, important for relaxing muscles, relieving headaches, helping you sleep. So things like yogurt and salmon, legumes, beans, green leafy vegetables, which I just talked about that, broccoli, avocados, nuts, those are foods that are high in calcium and magnesium, and those are really good for you. And then the other one, kind of the last one, are healthy fats, the omega-3 fatty acids. So again, salmon, sardines, avocados, things that you get that healthy fat in are really important for a mood stabilizer.
Haven't I seen eggs? Don't eggs contain omega-3s if they're naturally raised? Or am I making that up?
They can have a little bit in there, but you're going to get more of the
but not much.
The more of the B vitamins with that.
Okay, gotcha.
And then,
oh my gosh, you're making me hungry.
Hungry? Really? Well,
that's good food, man. You're talking about good food.
Yeah, I actually had a really late lunch today. Really, like literally right before this. So I'm not hungry at all. So when you said food, I'm like, oh, it's late. I was like, wow, it's pushing dinner time. It's getting there. So, and then of course, staying away from sugar, packaged foods, too much caffeine, too much alcohol, and then really staying away from the refined vegetable oils, like the corn, the vegetable, the canola oils. So that is my tip when it comes to eating healthy for stress relief, to have a good mind, and, because stress is a killer.
Yep. And of course, sleep, like you said, sleep is so important. And of course, stress can affect sleep, but I guess I would add to this, I think it's kind of intuitive, but caffeine, there's no doubt that small amounts of caffeine are not necessarily bad for us. And in fact, there's, obviously they can help concentration and mental agility or acuity. There's been a lot of studies there, but clearly, if you're having trouble sleeping or relaxing or just feeling like you cannot relax, you have got to cut back on caffeine. I mean, it seems pretty intuitive, but for some people, they're, just can't do it. And the Starbucks visit every morning is a ritual, and or just the coffee brewing at home. And again, I'm not anti-coffee or tea. I think there's a ton of good stuff. There's a lot of antioxidants and other things, and yet you can overdo it, and I certainly have had to cut my caffeine intake down as I get older and feel its stress effects and its maybe some acid reflux effects. So I've had to cut back and whatnot. And I lived. It's okay. I think that's an important distinction and point too.
Do you know that 200 to 360 milligrams of caffeine a day is actually good for you? It helps with the thought process. It helps you be alert. It helps with your metabolism. But anything above that 360 mark can really affect your adrenal glands, and you can go into like adrenal fatigue and things like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, tell me again. So I should know this probably, but I don't know. How can you tell the listeners and me how much is 360 milligrams of caffeine? Is that a medium? I mean, what is a good way to remember how much caffeine's in a certain amount of serving? Like how much is in a Coke, or how much is in a Diet Coke, or how much is in a cup of coffee, blah, blah, blah. Any way to remember that?
I think don't quote me. I think there's right around 65 to 80 in most of the pops out there. So if you drink pop, which you shouldn't, but if you drink pop, you could have, for the caffeine aspect of it, 2 or 3. Again, I don't think you should drink sugar pop or sugar-free pop. Coffee, you probably could have 2 strong cups. And if you go to Starbucks, it's going to be different than McDonald's. It's going to be different than Burger King. It's going to be different from a different coffee shop. But typically, it's about 2 cups of coffee a day or 3 glasses of tea. is what you can have.
And for those listeners who are listening in Texas or the southern part of the United States, Beth is referring to Cokes and Diet Cokes, not
Yeah, I will never get used to that. Never.
I mean, you can tell somebody who's not from Texas or originally not born here because it's very few of us say pop, and it's just funny. I mean, it's much more, it makes tons more sense to say pop, by the way. So I'm not making fun of you because we use Coke for everything. You know, we just say Coke for all sodas. It's the funniest thing. It's just Coke, you know, it could be Sprite or Pepsi, but when we're talking about just garden variety soda pops, we just say Cokes. It's so funny to hear you say that.
I know. I will always say pop. I will. And I, Someday. I actually said I said y'all.
Yeah, we'll see. Now, tell me this. When you go back home to Indiana, do they say that you've got an accent like you're now a Texan?
They say I sound Southern. And every once in a while when I listen to myself, like on this show or I'm just talking and I forget what it was I said. And I was like, oh my gosh, I sound like I am a cowgirl. I mean, I really felt like I sounded Texan. And I don't even know what the word was. So every once in a while, I've been here, gosh, forever. How much long have I been here? 17 years. Dang.
Wow.
Wow. 17 years. Wow. Okay. I haven't thought about that in a long time. So I've been here a very long time. So I pretty much am a Texan. And I think I'm my language, a little bit of Midwestern, a little bit of Northern, a little bit of Southern. So I'm a mutt.
But, okay. Yeah. So it's a miracle of internet, Beth.
Yes.
I have looked up on the Starbucks website. They have a PDF file and it's nutritional information for their beverages. It was very helpful. Good job, Starbucks. And for a brewed dark roast coffee, venti, which is, I think, their term for the biggest, right? So for a venti, that's 591 milliliters of coffee. Wow,
that's a lot.
That's over half a liter of coffee. But anyway, let's just start there. That will give you 340 milligrams of caffeine.
Yeah, that would be your limit.
What you're saying is that for most listeners, it's okay to have a venti coffee at Starbucks, you know, the equivalent of that much caffeine. And I would just say, again, in my experience as a physician, is that I hear what you're saying, but certainly, like I said, if you're having trouble with acid indigestion or elevated blood pressure or anxiety or sleep, I would never go higher than that and maybe try cutting it back a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm.
But, that's why I say 200. Spreading out 200 to 360 is good, you know, is okay to have. And that's kind of a wide range. I think for someone who, you know, a female might need more like 200, and then a larger male could have like a 360. So, and see how it feels. Yeah. I'm very sensitive to caffeine. If I have caffeine, I'll never forget this. I was at a 5K about 3 years ago. And at the time, I would drink a Rockstar. I haven't had a Rockstar in years. I will say that, but it was right before 5K. I wanted to run. So I had a Rockstar and I was helping people put their bibs on them at the 5K. Mm-hmm. And someone's like, why are you shaking so bad? And I'm like, I just had 180 milligrams, which again is on the lower end. And that's all I had during that day, but I had just had it. So I'm very caffeine sensitive. So if I have it, I'm like, blah, 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 blah. Thus, that's why I had it before I ran 3 miles. So, yes.
Well, again, we've had patients come in the ER with supraventricular tachycardia, which is an atypical type of tachycardia from drinking too many monster drinks or whatever those extra caffeinated drinks are, which again are safe in moderation, but don't overdo it. But I think that again, just find your own way out there as far as your caffeine ingestion. But I think getting back to our original topic, stress, I think life's stressful and taking in too much caffeine may not help. That's all. I think that's my point.
Yeah, absolutely.
And speaking to somebody who does have caffeine every day, I'm not anti-caffeine, but I think just in all things, moderation, you know.
Yeah, I guess we can say that with most things. So,
Well,
I know. I actually, before we wrap up, I want to put a big plug in to our listeners. We have a huge event coming up. So before we wrap up and before we go to commercial break, I really wanted to talk about something exciting. And that is Up to Me Radio is the proud host of the Hear My Heart Women of Faith Conference. And Scott and I, we really wanted to be there, but with situations and work, we couldn't. But we want to invite all of you, our listeners, to join the whole team of Up to Me Radio at that upcoming Hear My Heart Women of Faith Conference. It's from October 9th through the 11th in Atlanta, Georgia. And there's something for everyone. There's entertainment, industry panels, business tips, award luncheon, an evening like red carpet gala, and so much more. So again, you're going to have the opportunity to meet the other show host in person, take pictures, get autographs, and be encouraged. So I really want you guys to think about attending, and you can purchase your tickets at www.hearmyheartconference.com.
So, and did you mention where it is, where it's located?
It's in Atlanta. Mm-hmm.
At the Hyatt Regency. Yes, the Hyatt Regency, Atlanta Perimeter at Villa. Christina, located at 4000 Summit Boulevard, Atlanta, Georgia, 30319. And yes, I am so bummed that I couldn't attend. I was hoping to attend, but work issues have gotten in the way. And I will be there next time if I can. I just think it's so important that, you know, that women's health is addressed in ways that haven't been in the past. And so anytime I can be a part of something like this, I would love to be. And so I encourage those who are in the Atlanta area or who are going to be able to be there in the Atlanta area on October 9th through 11th, check it out. Check out the website and get some more information. And it's not too late to buy tickets.
180 over 111.
I actually bought my plane ticket and everything to go. But between the flood
150
and work
over 90. And I had a stroke.
This is what high blood pressure sounds like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a stroke are far from silent.
No way.
Get back on your treatment plan or talk with your doctor to create a plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe. Everything's changed.
Brought to you by the American Stroke Association. American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. And I want to thank our listeners who stayed with us and who joined pretty much our first show of the season. You know, without our listeners, this show would not be possible. And I want to thank you for tuning in every week, every show. We have received some positive feedback as well as great questions. And we promise to answer every question we get in our segments. And we'll answer back by email, or we'll actually say it during the radio show, or maybe even ask you to be on. So it's really simple. All you have to do is ask your health or wellness question to a Healthier View podcast at uptomeradio.com. And I really want to encourage everyone to subscribe to this show. So as a subscriber, you'll receive additional information on topics we cover. You're going to get easy to follow recipes and hot deals from our sponsor for products, prizes, services that will support your journey to a healthier lifestyle. So Scott, can you tell the audience some ways they could actually listen to our show aside of the Up to Me URL?
Yeah. So of course, most people I'm sure are listening on the Up to Me, the two is the number two, uptomeradio.com. But you can also listen to it on your favorite podcast apps like Apple Podcast, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Google Play Music.
Wow, that's pretty exciting. I kind of like when I hear that, I feel like we're kind of big time, you know?
Beth, you are big time. I mean, anybody who's testified before Congress, I'm just in awe of you, and I'm so honored to be able to help you spread the word of wellness.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to be humble. So I was going to say, yes, thank you. I'm just going to leave it at that. Thank you. But one of my New Year's resolutions in October is to be more humble. So thank you. That was very sweet of you. And I feel the same way about you. I've learned so much. I've known you for a really long time. And I think you're an amazing doctor and friend. And I'm so honored to work with you. So I'm looking forward to a good season with you.
Well, I'm going to keep doing this, Beth, until I show up one day for work and there's nobody there's nobody in the hospital to see. We did our job.
That's sweet.
Everybody's healthy. Everybody's out walking in the grass barefoot.
That's so funny. That's hilarious. I love it. Okay. Well, I hope everyone had a great time, and until the next show, have a healthy day.
Happy October, everybody. We'll see you soon.